Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
film
conversation.
Hooray!
yay
Woo! Boom.
I'm the only one who enjoys that, aren't I?
I was more spirited this time, but no, I didn't really enjoy doing the broken up cheerleading that we do every episode. No.
I love it.
Yay.
Well, anyway, it's podcast time, guys, and we've got another film to chew over. And that film is the 1993, I want to say, spaghetti exploitation or Western neighborhood movie. Like, what it's sort of. I don't really know what genre this would be, but it's a Western, but it's more 90s and like black, I guess. Anthony, it was your pick. The film was Posse, and yeah, why did we watch this film?
Well, we've explained how we choose our picks for the show
We
before,
might have, if it made the edit.
where we put together like a small list of a few films, and then we kind of vote for which one. So my suggestions this time around were for films with Billy Zane, because I felt like I needed, or we all needed, a big Billy Zane injection in our lives.
I know I welcomed it.
So this one was like, it's become like a total wild card kind of in my mind now, because it turned out to be the film with Billy Zane in the least of the three, and I really wasn't expecting you guys to choose it, but
Well,
we did, I guess, in
whatever
the
reason
end.
we plumbed for the Billy Zane slightly featuring movie of Posse, which, so you hadn't seen it before.
No,
It was
I'd seen the other two, and I felt like they were good choices, and I felt like I needed a third, so I went with this one because it's kind of placed as a Western. It's kind of placed between kind of like the really good Westerns of the 90s. Like, you have, it's kind of sandwiched between Tombstone and Unforgiven and kind of Last of the Mohicans.
Sure.
So it kind of, it might have had some potential because kind of after that, like, all the Westerns got very bad for a long time.
Yeah, they had their heyday in the 60s, and after that, there's different eras of cowboy films, but this is definitely, well, you mentioned when it sort of landed in the 90s. It's not known for its cowboy western type movies, but
Well, there was a little bit of a resurgence in the early 90s, like you said, with stuff like
that's a
Unforgiven,
good film. Yeah.
Tombstone, Quick and the Dead,
Yeah.
which is less good but still kind of fun.
Not the heyday, though.
No. It's like it was like a little odd little resurgence where suddenly people went, "Hey, remember
Wasn't that
Westerns?" And
quaint?
then everyone went, "Yeah," and then made four, and that was it.
Yeah, so, well, let's talk expectations. Anthony, you've kind of foreshadowed your opinion and expectations a bit there. Is there anything more you want to say about it going in?
All I can really say is most of my opinion is going to be kind of based on why isn't there more Billy Zane in this film?
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll address the lack of Billy Zane in this one with another Billy Zane film at some point, but for now, dealing with other people's expectations going in, I'll say the thing that made me go, do you know what, we should watch this one, was, I mean, the trailer's a little bit poor in that the music over it doesn't suit at all, and it's just weird 90s blandness, and it just sucks the life out of the trailer. But the footage I liked, mainly the fact that a guy uppercuts a horse. I thought that was amazing.
I gotta be honest, that was kind of pretty much the highlight of the whole film.
It really was.
It's fleeting, but it was good. So that was enough. And I like Billy Zane a bit. He had an eye patch. I think that was Abby's reasoning. Abby, what was your thoughts going in?
The trailer suggested that it was going to be one of those anachronistic films that are set during a certain period, but are really just a badass action movie.
You were expecting another Quick and the Dead.
I don't remember Quick and the Dead that well, but you're probably right.
It's a Sam Raimi 90s Western. Very, very Sam Raimi. It's very much a kind of pastiche of Westerns, which is It's the same as you. That's what I was expecting from this.
I saw that Billy Zane had an eye patch, and I didn't know that that was a tick box in my head that I needed to fill.
Yeah, because Billy Zane is kind of known for having quite hammy and cheesy roles in things, whether they're cheap films or whether they're quite, you know, high-budget stuff like Titanic. He's good at hamming it up in a good way. I think we all more or less enjoy Billy Zane, like, in his roles when he does them a bit more over the top. Am I right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I would say so. He's so good at it.
What about you, Jamie? Expectations and thoughts going into this film before you saw it?
Same as Abby. I was expecting something a bit more... I was expecting something quite colourful and over the top. And something that would be using Western tropes as a platform to, like, not parody, but pay homage to it and at the same time do something a bit more modern.
Yeah.
And I was expecting there to be more, because when I found out who was in it, you know, that it was starring Mario Van Peebles, directed by him, Marvin Van Peebles was in it, and it had, like, Isaac Hayes, Pam Grier. I was expecting more blaxploitation.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, I was expecting that to be a heavier thing, like, let's place blaxploitation in a Western setting.
I mean, you know, it was made in a world way before Django Unchained, because, you know,
yeah.
I was thinking before there was Django Unchained, this was maybe their attempt at... What if, mm-hmm. like, black culture goes back to the Western genre and has a go at it? And obviously, I was a bit naive because it wasn't quite what I'd hoped for. My expectations were skewed by Django Unchained being so awesome. And
I haven't seen Django Unchained still, but, like, I know enough about Tarantino and I've seen enough of it that I can kind of get the tone from, you know, trailers and clips and stuff. And yeah, that it. I don't want to say it reminded me because I haven't seen it, but it brought it to mind while I was watching this. I kept thinking, this is like Django Unchained with all the life sucked out of it.
But yeah, it was like 90s black culture going into the West, and it is that. But like, I think we're all sort of hinting at the fact that it wasn't all that special and maybe a bit dull at times. But you know, if you're gonna check out before there was Django Unchained films, maybe check out Django. Nothing to do with blaxploitation, just some really good Western-sploitation, you know, films. So I recommend checking out the original Django's. But this film, Posse, that's what we're here to talk about. Who was in it? Who directed it? And who wrote it? Anyone?
Well, Posse was made in 1993 by Mario Van Peebles, who also stars as, I suppose, the main character, Jesse Lee.
Can you say that name again? Mario what?
Van Peebles.
Good name.
I have had to look up, like, a synopsis for this film, because thinking back on it, it's really hard
it's
to tell you what it's really about. So all I can do here is read off IMDb, and it says, a group of mostly black infantrymen return from the Spanish-American War with a cachet of gold. They travel to the West, where the leader searches for the men who lynched his father. Starring Mario Van Peebles, as previously mentioned, Stephen Baldwin, Charles Lane, Tommy Lister, Billy Zane, of course, and Big Daddy Kane.
The wrestler is Tommy Tiny Lister.
I didn't know he was a wrestler.
Yeah, he was Zeus. He's in one of the WrestleManias.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea.
I don't know how you didn't recognise him, because he's a giant, bald, black man.
I recognised him, but didn't know where from.
From the film Runaway Train, which we also have a spoiler-filled conversation on.
I think I recognised him from The Dark Knight. He's the guy on the boat who takes Decimator from the guard and chucks it out the window.
So he's our wrestling connection for this film. little Ty Lister and his giant head and muscles and horse-punching ways. So, it is a difficult one to nail down the plot in one go, I'd say. It's kind of what you said. It's some guys who are in the military being forced to steal some gold, and then they're running away. They're also after a vendetta for a dead father. And then they're protecting a village, and there's corruption, and there's the KKK. There's a whole bunch of stuff in. It's almost like it could have been a better TV show that was split up into different chapters and something. You know, it could have been better as a TV show, I think. What do you, like, because it just, it's a bit all over the place. There's almost two bad guys in it, you know. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I really felt like the film didn't really know what it wanted to be. Like, at times it would change from, like, comedy to, like, does it really want to be as savage as, say, like, Django Unchained was? And then sometimes it felt like a TV melodrama.
Yeah, it kind of amped up the romance at one point.
Yeah, that was the bit where it really started to fall apart for me, actually, was the introduction of...
Who needs ladies, eh?
Yeah, I know.
Spoiler good Western.
Oh, exactly. They introduced this, like, love interest suddenly, and then, like, just... Oh, it just dragged it down. Like, the whole film was very obviously a Mario Van Peebles vanity project.
Yeah, it was. Once I found, like, out he was the director and in the main role, it was kind of like,
yeah,
this is for you to be Clint Eastwood, but, like, a new version.
Yeah. And it's just... Oh, he put himself in... Like, he made himself look as cool as possible. And he gave himself gold bullets, and then had a really drawn-out sex scene with this woman who's thrown in there towards the end of the film.
Oh, that was
and that was the most 90s sex scene I've seen.
It was, and it just the way he makes love, I will call it generously,
yeah,
was just so, yeah. What are you, a child? What are you doing?
He's just kind of flopping and rolling all over her and
squeezing. Oh, and was... oh dear. And the fact that, like, how gangster is having, like, gold bullets? That's like the typical, like, kind of, yeah, we're doing a hood movie, so let's have gold bullets, but it's a Western, so it's kind of our trope of choice, and, oh, what are you doing?
I thought it was meant to be sort of ironic or something, that someone associated with gold was going to get killed with gold bullets, but not really.
No, doesn't Billy Zane buy it in, a explosion?
Yeah, he gets stabbed, shot, and blown up.
Pretty cool.
But he'll be back. It'll be fine.
Or he lost one eye. He'll cope. No, it's kind of a film of two halves, I'd say. Like, it kind of... It even splits the point of the movie into two separate bits and sort of ties it up at the end. But, like, the first bit, when we're introduced to the posse from the film, that's kind of Civil War... Oh, no. There's an old man telling us that history isn't quite how we remember it. And you should recall that... there were loads and loads and loads of black guys all being cowboys in the past. And I'm sure there were plenty. And I'm sure there were townships of, like, black Americans in ye olde Western times. But you get the sense of, we're going to change history a little bit for the convenience of the plot, you know?
It was like the book ending of the film with the old man. Mm. Like, the message of the film seemed to be, there were black cowboys and everybody ignores them, which, you know, legit. Like, fair enough. Yeah, perfectly legitimate. Like, and I like the idea of having a film that explores that, but put a plot in there to explore it with. Like, don't just come up with this idea of, you know, let's acknowledge the fact that there were black cowboys without thinking how we're going to do it, and just make the film seemingly by brainstorming for 20 minutes and then just film in whatever comes out of that session.
I have a question, actually.
Go on.
Who was that old man?
He was the kid who gets given the little metal book of poems because our main character reads poems as well as shoots people and stuff.
You said poems? Poem.
Oh, it was just
one? I'm pretty sure there was nothing else written in that book.
Yeah.
Still, it was written in the book by a black person, and it was trying to tackle issues about how black people were treated in the West. I think it did attempt to have a kind of heart and a message about, like, how black people were perceived and treated in that time and how history does forget certain things. So I think it was attempting to be a little bit, you know, more meaningful and not just let's have fun with this thing. I don't think it pulled it off.
the idea was admirable. It's just the film. It's a shame that like you've got this good this good intention, and then Mario Van Peebles just uses it to make himself look as cool as possible for nearly 2 hours. That old man, by the way, is played by Woody Strode, who is probably, like, for fans of westerns, is best known as one of the guys at the beginning of Once Upon a Time in the West.
All right.
At the train station, that really long, drawn-out sequence at the beginning where there's no music, it's just diegetic sound, and he's one of the guys waiting for Charles Bronson at the train station.
Oh, good trivia. He plays a very convincing child as well. I mean, that's amazing.
He's a versatile actor.
Yeah. It was a weird thing, actually. Whenever they'd use flashbacks to establish the backstory for the main character, it would be in sepia, which is kind of a western-y colour anyway. So it'd just be like, really, you're going to use sepia to show the past? And everyone he would kill would get a flashback to when they had a pitchfork and were like at a burning... Well, a burning torch and like, oh, I'm gonna get you. It was like, what?
After a while, it was like, okay, I understand.
All your kills are justified.
Yeah, it's fine. You don't have to keep telling me.
Yeah. So you know, it's a weird one, but the start of the film, Billy Zane is a fantastically over the top evil. Like he's getting the first time we see him, he's getting a portrait done on the battlefield while loads of the soldiers are out being killed. He's there smugging it up and trying to be like a minor celebrity within the army. Did you guys have high hopes when we caught Billy Zane at the start?
I did, certainly. It seemed like he was obviously being set up as the main villain for the piece.
I was enjoying it at that point.
Yeah.
He hadn't even done much either. It was just his mere presence alone made you go,
he was just deliciously villainous and smug and kind of just a git.
It was so sort of, at that point it was very over the top and cartoony.
It should have stayed that way.
Yeah.
But basically he's there to bully all the poor black guys and the soldiers he doesn't like. There's a couple of prisoners within their ranks that he decides to torment and execute and stuff. And basically he puts together a posse, if you will. I think that's literally what they call them. But he puts together a group of guys and it's mostly black guys. And they also throw in Steve Baldwin as the... Well, what do you guys make of Steve Baldwin? Let's take the white guy first, because, you know, priorities, right? But Steve Baldwin, what did you guys make of his character? Let's take him one by one, why not?
He was so... I really liked that he was out for himself, but then also liked the company of other people.
He was out for a thrill and a good time. He didn't seem that bothered by, you know, potential death.
Yeah, but then when he made friends with Father Time for no reason, really. You cheated. I'm okay with that. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, the setting up the whole, hey, we can do the, you know, we can like fake out people at card games and pretend that we don't know each other or not. And like, it just never, like, does that go anywhere? I don't even remember.
No, not really.
Yeah, you know, I mean... I thought, I mean, every now and again, he'd sound like a surfer and not a cowboy. I don't know if he quite nailed the accent.
That's just Stephen Baldwin, though, isn't it?
You wouldn't really use the word talent around him. I mean, Biodome is probably a testament to his abilities. But I didn't hate him. I thought he was okay, and I thought at least his hat is really, really big. Like...
At first, I felt the same way. I was getting a bit annoyed by him, and I really didn't like looking at his fake non-tooth that he had for a short while. So I was really happy when he had his gold tooth inserted later on. So from that point, I'm happy enough.
So pre the gold tooth, he looked a bit stupid.
I was a bit annoyed.
Oh yeah, sure. But he does, like his general character is supposed to be a thrill seeker. and that's about it. He plays poker and he likes living life fast and for the fun of it all rather than for the money. Other members of the posse, there was a guy called Wheezy who was... anyone want to have a crack at nailing what he was about?
And he was meant to be sort of the company clerk in the military, but he was treated more as a slave, I guess, having to get tea and that kind of thing.
They had a semi enjoyable funny moment where Billy Zane kind of bullies him into making a punchline about the way, like, slave black people are supposed to talk and stuff, which I thought was kind of deliciously cruel and funny. And but he was there as a kind of, like, I don't know, the radar of the group, to mix in a MASH metaphor.
He was almost there as token character development. It was like, look how rubbish he is with knives. And then at the end of the film, it was like, look how good he is with knives now.
Yeah.
See, we can do character development.
But he was quite a helpful guy. He gets them, when they're on the run, he sorts out some coffins for them to ride in across the river or something. And, you know, he plays his part, but, you know, there's not much to his character other than he's the kind of glasses-wearing wimpy one.
Well, the weird thing about him was he's put across initially as radar from MASH, like kind of, you know, geeky and shy and a bit like, you know, awkward and everything. But then as soon as he gets to New Orleans, he's a ladies' man.
Well, like, but he does that for you.
And like he's super confident and everything. It's like there's not much consistency with his character. Like, that doesn't make sense in the way they set him up initially.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that's fair. So the big guy, Tiny Lister, plays him, or Zeus, if you want.
You can call him Zeus.
Yeah. He's the big, burly, kind of squinky-eyed fella. The brawn and the of the piece, I guess.
His character is called Obobo.
Obobo.
And I don't know if that's a pun or what.
I don't know what it is. It's just a weird name. We had Bean in the Matador. We have Bobo in this. Obobo? I don't even know.
I just noticed something. That Stephen J. Cannell was in this. Now, this will have a reason in a minute. But he wrote the A-Team. And the bit where they knock out Obobo to put him in the common. Put him in a coffin was really A-teamy.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there was some like little influence in there when Stephen J. Cannell was around acting, going, "Oh, well, you could do this."
I totally like when they have to escape. Which I don't know how much we'll get into the plot because it's all over the shop. But there is a lovely Mr. T moment where I ain't going on no coffin on no river, and it's like, but look over there, bonk. What did they even do? They like tricked him. Like how
he was getting him to look at his reflection in the book, like a bud in the back of the book,
right.
Like a budgie in a cage in a mirror. And then they smacked him over the back of the head and gave him a concussion and threw him in a coffin and sealed him in. Yeah, he'd be fine.
That's right. It was the weird. Look at your face. My dad always told me, look at if you could see your face in a shiny book, clonk. It was just what?
It's so reassuring. Like, how he trusted Jesse after that, I don't know. Like, yeah, look at your face and everything's going to be okay, and then I'm going to hit you really hard on the back of the head. It's not like he's going to wake up and not know what happened.
Well, it's like Mr. T, he's always like, how did we get over here? Oh, we walked around. Like, we didn't get into no plane. Like, don't worry about it. Yeah, it was... But he was their kind of muscly moron. He was fine. I don't have much more to say about him.
He was probably the only character I actually liked or cared about in any way.
He did punch out a horse, so...
Yeah, and he was, you know, kind of reasonably adorable as a big, dumb oaf.
Aww.
Yeah.
He also chose his lady based on skill and, I guess, size.
The lady in New Orleans that you talk about, I think she chose him. She was like, I'm having some of me, the big guy. Like, because he didn't even see her at first. She kind of was like...
Wait, that's Fremanville near the end, isn't it? The singer.
I thought it was New Orleans.
No, that's towards the end of the film where he, like, she singles him out and then...
Okay.
Yeah.
Who else we got left in this group?
Oh, Angel. I was so glad Angel died.
Aww.
Oh, he was awful. Dude. He was the most irritating character.
We're gonna have a fight over this one. We'll come to Father Time. He was a bit later as well. But Angel, I liked him the best. Like, no. Yes. Oh, is this the guy I'm thinking of? That he got killed. He was kind of drunk and happy, and they killed him at the brothel.
He was played by Tone Locke, and the only piece of IMDb trivia for the whole film is that a PA was specifically assigned to follow Tone Locke around between setups as he constantly wandered off set, usually to the craft services table.
Genius. I like this guy even more.
It's like, it's just, I'm in the movie, but I'm mainly just here for the sandwiches.
I thought he looked funny in like his clothes, and I thought he was like one of the better upbeat guys. I was just enjoying him as he was like mucking around in the background. When they get to New Orleans and are in a brothel, there's two characters having a chat, and he's just mucking around with like a mask on in the back and dancing and stuff.
He was the only one who was there in the 90s. Like, everyone else was trying to be somewhat like period, and he was just like, no, it's 1993, I'm just gonna act like it is.
That's what I liked him. What do you two make of him?
Well, he didn't do much up until that point, so there wasn't a whole lot to feel about him.
Sure.
But when he did do that, it stopped at being so po-faced for a little while, and that was nice.
I suppose, yeah, when he dies, the comedy dies with him.
Yeah.
Because that is when the film starts to kind of just, after New Orleans, things start to get really weird and serious.
Hmm. So, so he's kind of replaced in the posse by this weirdly named Father Time character who's rather dapper and has a pocket watch and...
The worst nickname ever.
Father Time.
Also, I think that's where Stephen J. Connell was. I think he was one of the poker players. But yeah, Father Time was just, oh, great. We get someone who's kind of dull and has no purpose.
I think the whole, like, setting up his stopwatch and everything, and then, well, okay, he has one. I guess that's why he's Father Time. What?
Yeah, it was just...
Like, he never does anything. But there's that really weird bit where those guys come in and like find them in New Orleans and have their guns trained on him, and he gets his watch out and he like counts down, and then Billy Zane happens to turn up at just the right time and kills all the guys.
Yeah, is he in cahoots with Billy Zane? Because he wasn't, like, he just has telepathy that he keeps like up to date on his watch. He's a weird guy. What did you make of him, Anthony? Father Time.
To be honest, a lot of the characters kind of blend in my mind because just the defining word of this like film is just bland.
Yeah.
Mm. And Father Time kind of like epitomizes that a little bit, because he just kind of turns up for no reason and is there for no real reason.
He's caught up in it. It's literally like, well, we had to fire the guy who's dead, so we like he's not doing a good job. Kill him. And we'll hire someone else. I got a better idea for a character. It's kind of like, what if there was like a cool pimp back in the world?
he does kind of epitomize all the problems with the film, actually, because he's got this like potential to be a cool character. Like, he's got an odd nickname. He's got a gimmick. You know, he's dressed quite uniquely. He's got this taste of a unique character to him. And there is just nothing done with him. He's just there for the, and like, he barely even does anything to differentiate himself from the other characters. And that's the problem with the whole film. It's just like, it's all these like seeds of ideas, and they've just gone, yeah, that sounds cool, and they've shoved it in, and then just forgotten that it's there and gone on and done something else.
Maybe so. I think it could have been passed on to a TV writer, and they could have made a half decent blaxploitation western TV show, and they would have had plenty of material to sort of pastiche the West in a kind of cool urban way or something. But
you wanted Briscoe County Jr. but with a black cast.
I don't know what that means, but I'll say that I wanted The Wire meets
the Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah, whatever. Name your Western of choice.
It was a Western TV show starring Bruce Campbell.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, so we've got our posse, and essentially, we've kind of talked a little bit about what happened in New Orleans and a bit throughout, but basically, they're sent to get some gold, they kill the dudes they're meant to, and they're kind of double-crossed by Billy Zane's character, and he's going to kill them. They all have a shootout. Horses get punched. I can't mention that enough. It's literally the only thing I'm hanging on to. They have a scuffle. They're on the run then from Billy Zane because basically he was just going to go, we'll kill you and say you were naughty and take the gold. And then that becomes the movie's focus is them escaping. But then also, turns out the guy we haven't discussed that much, Peebles' character himself, Jesse Lee?
Yeah.
Yes.
He has a dead father who was killed by racists and... You know, just the guy could write and he liked talking, so let's murder him, not the white people. And
he was a preacher, and he was preaching that, you know, black people should be treated as people and not animals.
Exactly, and you know, suppressive, horrible white people didn't like that, and they were like, let's burn the outline of his planned school or whatever it was.
It was the church. It was, I think it was the church of the town hall, because he was going to build Fremanville.
Yeah.
And then the white folks lynched him and tied him to the church and burnt it down. And then, it turns out later on that the town was still built.
Yeah.
Like, in his memory.
And that's kind of where our posse heads to.
For some reason. Like, yeah, they don't so much head there in a direct way as meander across some landscape for a very, very long time.
And it just so happens that Jesse
Lee... naked in a river. And...
Sorry,
I was just going to say... skinny dipping and a really unnecessary scene.
I'm glad you brought it up. in this film, we have a particularly good scene where everyone decides to let's have a skinny dip now that we're on the run, and we see a whole lot of naked dudes, like not even in the water, standing with their stuff out of the water. We get a lot of bum shots and a lot of just men having a big homoerotic play in the water together.
That was so weird, because there's something quite cute about someone just pushing somebody else into the water and then jumping in and then just kind of messing about. But then to cut to everyone being naked and just frolicking. It just went over the line for me. Like,
things are getting a bit Greek here now. I don't know if, you know.
It was in a way, it's nice, because you kind of expect the movie to be something where you might get a bit of... we do see Jesse Lee with his love interest later on, and she gets a bit undressed and stuff. But at least they did have plenty of naked guys for the ladies who somehow walked into the cinema this day.
Yeah, the women who'd been tricked into watching this film.
Yeah.
In that way, it was democratic, I guess. Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, they kind of meander their way across various locations in the West, all of it very... meh. Like, I don't know, none of it's shot, like, none of it takes advantage of the scenery like many Westerns do. It's not shot particularly splendidly. I mean, sometimes it feels a bit like maybe we're in a studio when, maybe it's budget constraints or whatever, but, you know, it could have been directed a little better, perhaps. But then the director is in it, so, you know, like...
Yeah, he was busy.
What was Jesse Lee about? I mean, he's essentially just a Zorro-looking guy without the mask. Just a black guy with a cool black hat and gold bullets. I mean, what was his character, really?
Bland.
Yeah, it's like completely dimensionless archetype.
Yeah, like you were saying beforehand, like he's clearly written himself... into a, like, Clint Eastwood, I'm really cool character.
Yeah.
But instead of being intimidating and cool, he just comes off as bland and boring.
It's like a little kid playing, you know, cowboys and being, like, he always has to be the best one of all of them.
You can't do that. I'm not dead. Your bullets didn't hit me. They missed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Clint Eastwood is it looks like he doesn't do anything, and that he's cool because he doesn't talk much and looks mean. So if you try and do that, it could work, but it probably won't.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not. He hasn't got that effortless kind of coolness that even that his dad Marvin Van Peebles has.
Yeah, that's such a shame. that his dad was way better than him in this movie.
And I was at least pleased that his dad was in it as well.
Two other names that cropped up in the opening credits that I was a bit like, where are these guys? And then they appear later on. It's Isaac Hayes and Pam Grier, who are in some great blaxploitation movies and are just tremendous actors and stuff. But they're just sort of townsfolk that are underused incredibly.
Yeah, like to
smallest, pointless, most pointless cameos in like any film I've ever seen.
This is the other thing as well. It's like the problem is the film doesn't go with either genre. It doesn't try and mix them up. It doesn't go one way or the other. It doesn't go full Western. It doesn't go full blaxploitation. It just like ticks boxes and like shoves tropes in and just goes, right, well, we've done that now. So, you know, it's a Western, but it's also a blaxploitation because we've got Pam Grier and Isaac Hayes and Marvin Van Peebles.
Yeah.
I can imagine Marvin Van Peebles directed like and starred in Sweetback's Badass Song, which I mentioned in the coffee discussion, is considered, I don't know if it's considered the first blaxploitation, but it's considered like the trendsetter for the genre. And, you know, so he's kind of like the father of the blaxploitation genre. And I can't help imagining that like he watched this back after Mario made it and just kind of went, well, you tried, son.
You had the ingredients.
Yeah, you at least you made the effort.
You've reminded me of something that I just want to name drop. We don't have to talk about it. But Meyer van Peebles has also directed a film called Confessions of an Ex-Doofus Issue-Footed Mother.
I think he's also directed a film called Badass. Well, you know, so underusing some terrific actors. I mean, I kind of wanted Isaac Hayes, when the posse turned up in town, I wanted him to be like, hello there, children, and like give them a lesson or something. Or just pull the chef's shtick out of his bag or something. Or maybe just do a song. He's a multi-talented man. I mean, he's even in the A-team.
How you can have a blaxploitation movie with Isaac Hayes in it and not have Isaac Hayes on the soundtrack. I don't know what Mario Van Peebles was thinking.
They spent all their gold on
bullets. Maybe he
got him late. To be fair, in context to the whole of the soundtrack, I don't know what he was thinking at all during the whole film, let alone just not using Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, because that's the other problem, is that all the songs that they used,
like the first one that came up, I remember, like, that raised an eyebrow, was like the kind of 90s boy band harmonizing in the streets.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I thought at that point it was going to be total pastiche, like literally combining the world of 90s urban gangster movies with Western. And then it wasn't. It was like, what, you're not going 90s Western, you're just going weird moments and weird music.
Yeah.
It was so boy bandy and disappointing. It should have gone full-blown hip-hop and completely smashed the world.
Over the end credits, suddenly, where he just went, oh, the hell with it, and just put proper hip-hop over the credits.
It was a shame.
Which completely went against the tone of the weird tone of the film before.
But too late at that point.
Yeah, it's like, well, yeah, you've left it too long now.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the songs were like obviously trying to evoke that kind of like old like slave songs.
Mm.
But yeah, all sounded like they were recorded by Blue. So
yeah, I don't know. So a lot of problems we're fighting as we yawn our way through this one. So, you know, guys, we had some interesting bits. I think I enjoyed when they all got to the brothel in New Orleans. And I mean, it was a bit, I don't know, let's stuff as much in this scene as possible, the gambling and women and stuff. But I kind of like this juxtaposition of, what if black guys could be rich for a night? That's all fair in the brothel. Everyone cares about money there, you know, so I thought it could have been sumptuous and interesting at that point. But then, unfortunately, they leave that situation and move to more bland settings.
Yeah, they just go into some woods, which aren't particularly nicely shot, and wander around for a while again.
Yeah. And at some point, let's just skip to the bit where they're in the... Is it Freemantown? Or they're heading to Cutter Town? Or there's so many weird names.
Oh, something about trains. And that's where I just was lost at that point. I was just like, what is even happening anymore? Because there's there's two sheriffs. There's one of the other town who is also the leader of the KKK
Yeah.
And was he the sheriff? Yeah, he was a sheriff. And then you also had the sheriff of Fremanville, who was embezzling money from himself or something. No, I have no idea what was going on, and nobody explained anything. They all just sort of mumbled stuff to each other, and then went blacks, KKK, and there was a big gunfight.
Yeah,
that went on for several years.
Yeah, but we, yeah.
I wouldn't have minded so much if it had had some kind of escalation to it, because I've seen plenty of gunfights that are like, all right, really? Blimey. But this one was just, yeah, come on. Yeah. Really, you're still alive?
And you had, like, Richard Jordan turn up and go, I'm the villain now. And where's Billy Zane at this point?
he's tracking them with one eye, because he lost that in the scrap early on.
Yeah, his depth perception is not great. That's why it's taken him so long.
And at one point, they had...
He keeps looking through the telescope and judging distances all wrong.
Yeah, and at one point, he, like... they have a continuity thing where his eye patches up and you see both his eyes. So it's like an action sequence, possibly when he dies at the end. And it's just like, hang on, why is his eye patch up? What's got... Oh, it's not now? What? So it's not even like they kept that consistent, really. It's just shabby. But yeah, like you say, they grow a new villain. This racist guy who, you know, classic KKK bigoted douche. And fair enough, we're on board with that. We're a nice new modern audience. We hate racism too, and that's fine. I did enjoy seeing the little one of the old timey dudes from Fremantown, which was kind of their little western like township that had been through circumstance, been like a large amount of black people had come and set up shop there.
That was the one. Yeah, that was the one that Melvin Van Peebles' character wanted to build specifically as a black community to recognize that, yeah, like they are people and they deserve their own, they deserve to be recognized. And then, but unfortunately, decided to build it next to a really racist white town. I don't know.
Yeah, but they had a guy, an old timey guy there, and he was practicing his shooting on some of the most adorable KKK targets I've ever seen. It was lovely. Little white triangles that you'd shoot to practice. I thought they were great.
That was so lovely, because you couldn't tell what they were at first. Weird triangles. Oh, they're so cute!
KKK target. Oh, this one's got a bullet on his forehead. But we develop a history then. There's like all the characters of the town kind of remember Lee from his, you know, time before he was forced to be in the military due to blah, blah, who cares.
But they remember stuff that we've already been shown, so we're shown it again.
That's okay. One of the things I thought, once again, the attempt to do something serious that's about culture and things came up. And I liked that when the townsfolk were dealing with the threat of this KKK guy who was going to, you know, rightfully come and stop the criminals that Posse were. I don't know, it's a bit confusing. It's a bit of a grey area, really. He's a racist, but they are outlaws, technically speaking, even if Billy Zane did trick them. Anyway, the townsfolk have to debate what to do, because basically their town is potentially going to be ruined. They're supposed to hand over Jesse Lee, and they have a proper debate in the street. I kind of liked that there wasn't a clear let's all unite thing, you know? They were kind of arguing about it, you know? Did you guys...
It was so reasonable as well. It's like, I have an opinion. I have an opinion too. That's a good opinion. What about this opinion?
Yeah. Religions don't really talk it out in classic Westerns. It's just, you know, Clint Eastwood or whoever has a plan and they either hide or, you know, they tool up, like in that Seven Samurai thing that isn't samurais but is cowboys. What's that called?
Blazing Saddles.
Magnificent Seven. They, you know, the townsfolk join in, and sometimes they hide and build loads of coffins. But in this one, the townspeople were like, "Yeah, let's." Well, they weren't. Yeah, but they were discussing it, and it felt more realistic and almost like, "Hang on, we're getting to a proper serious movie again." And then it just becomes like boring shootouts, and you know, meh. The sheriff decide the good sheriff, who's a black guy, turns heel on them and is a bit of a I'm going to run away with the money, which was fairly sensible given the circumstances. I didn't fully dislike him. I mean, he kind of was a bit mean to his lady that is the romantic lead, but fundamentally, you know, getting everyone to calm down and then running away with the deeds to the town isn't that stupid. Am I being horrible by thinking that?
I honestly don't know, because the character was so all over the place. Like, he was there purely to, like, make the plot bend in the directions it needed to bend in when certain other characters turned up. It's like, well, we need somebody to be bad now, so you.
Yeah, you could be the betraying guy.
Quick, get a bit rapey with your fiancé.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, because essentially he deals with it. Like, I mean, he doesn't stick up for himself when the other white sheriff is in town. But he does, you know, he doesn't want the place to fall apart, and like the big evil railroad that we know has. I mean, the railroad system is a trope of many westerns, and it is, you know, it was built by slaves, and a lot of rich people profited, and a lot of poor people suffered for the railroad, and it's always this thing that comes up in westerns that it's both evil and good, but it you can't stop it, and that's an interesting thing to bring up, but it was such a side thing of. Oh, there's a train that's getting built, so that's a problem.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that is just completely half-cocked. They just put it in there, and then they're like, all right, well, it's there now, that'll do.
We've got a train problem that involves the town being taken over, and it's like, oh, it was so confusing and, like, weird. And all that matters, really, is that people get shot, and the bad guys die, and then, yay.
That's pretty much how the film presented it, too.
That's kind of the attitude it was presented with. It was just, as long as a few good guys die, so we feel bad, and as long as the good guys die, and I don't know, maybe a bullet can hit the tin poem book? Oh, it did, and it saved a life. Wow.
Well, not really, because he died anyway.
Oh. But it saved him, sort of.
Briefly, before he... Yeah, he was shot in the back.
It's ambiguous, it seems.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Because they took him out of the building, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Poor old Zeus.
And then, yeah, Billy Zane, as I said, gets stabbed, shot 3 times, and blown up.
As he remembers that he was the bad guy. Like, it's like,
he comes up and shot.
And then Billy Zane's like, I am here. Oh, yeah, you, well done. You've turned up for the end.
I happen to have turned up at exactly the right time.
And he has amazing hair at that point. I know Billy Zane always has amazing hair, but not in real life. Yeah. Like, whenever he has a wig, fantastic wig. I love Billy Zane's wig. And he has particularly great hair as he's, like, going up in flames. Well, just before he goes up in flames.
And also, wonderfully done, very subtle but beautiful eye makeup.
Yeah.
As usual.
He was wearing mascara all the way through the film.
That's just his eyes. They pop.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Billy Zane. He should have had more of a go. But yeah, you know, we've kind of, you know, that's what happened in it. But I mean, what things? I was hoping I'd find more things I like, because there were little moments where I enjoyed myself, but it was just. Just shabby in all directions, really.
The final bookend as well, with the kid, now he's grown up, and suddenly he's being interviewed by journalists.
Yeah.
Which is, like, not set up. It's like they didn't even think through the bookends. When they, like, it's like they started filming without a finished script. It felt like a first draft.
Yeah.
There is, for me, a worse bookended, like, a worse bookend for a Western. And the film that recently came out, The Lone Ranger, has Johnny Depp as ye olde, like, Native American guy from the film. What's his name? Tonto?
Yeah.
And he's just in this disgusting rubber suit, so he looks like a decrepit old man. And he tells a story to a little kid. And for me, that was more obnoxious and horrible than this one. But only because it's foul and grotesque as well as pointless in that film. But, so it doesn't even take the title of worst book ending to a Western ever.
No, because it's too mediocre to be the worst anything.
Has anyone got any good parts to this? Because I feel like there were some gems.
But it's not so much good parts for me, as it was a wonderful exercise for me, because there were so many black actors in it. The whole time I was just going, oh, it's that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy. You! I never see you in anything! That guy.
Yeah.
So that made me enjoy it more than it deserved, probably.
Yeah, other than Peebles being like making a bit of a botched movie overall. I did enjoy the. I don't think anyone did a job where I really hated them. Even like Stephen Baldwin, who's a bit meh. Like I genuinely didn't hate anyone from it, but I didn't like. You know, it wasn't that interesting either.
That's the thing. That's the problem with it. I would have preferred it if I hated all the characters with a passion. It was the fact that I just did not care either way. I just. Oh, it was 2 hours, like just under 2 hours, and it felt like four. It felt like I spent my whole afternoon watching it, because nothing stuck out, and it just went on and on, and because it had no like coherent kind of through line either, like with plot or like thematically or anything, it just flopped about until it like finally just died a quiet death at the end.
I feel like you've done a good job of summing up your thoughts there, JV.
But No.
That's exactly what I wanted from you. But I would like some kind of rating system. I'm struggling. Maybe cowboy. Well, if it's a cowboy, who is it? Have a think about it while someone else gives their thoughts. But a cowboy that sums up this film, right, guys? Other expectations. Anthony, what were you thinking? No, that's not fair. Thank you for this film. You didn't know what it was about going in either, so we can't blame you. If anything, it's our fault.
Thanks.
What did you think overall?
As a Western, it adds nothing to the genre.
It adds a terrible movie.
And nothing more. It's just, it's kind of, it's filled with cliches the way, like, a kind of first-time director like kind of envisions a film where it's like, oh, I'm doing a Western. Well, in Westerns, we have this shot and we have this guy playing harmonica. You have to have, to have a guy playing harmonica in a Western film. But I saw it a few days ago and it just kind of like remains a misty cloud in my mind of not really caring about the bland characters and the goings on.
Mm.
And even though it was trying to have a message, it just kind of falls flat. It's like it's a message that kind of like needs to be told and would make a really good film. But I think it needed to choose to be a bit more gritty.
Definitely. It could have either gone the vacuous, let's just make it hip-hop meets the West, and a kind of, you know, gangsters, but like 90s gangsters reinterpreted into an old-style Western. It could have gone, like, I don't know, a bit more like the Moulin Rouge treats history. Or it could have done a serious piece about, you know, African Americans in the West and the different like parties that were black and forgotten by history, couldn't it? You know.
Yeah, but the film just in the end, I think it doesn't really know what it is. Is kind of comes across as a vanity project and just too overshot, too many canted angles, too many stupid flashbacks.
Too many
trying to be all artsy.
With that stock sound effect every single time as well.
I forgot about the terrible sound of punches just sounded like, like I don't know, like a NAF computer game, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. That was awful. Genuinely, the first time they threw a punch, there was even punches being thrown off screen when Billy Zane was walking and talking. I was like, what's that? Has something gone off in my house? Is there a different thing playing?
Yeah, they were so loud on the soundtrack that like they over like, oh god, there's so many problems with this that I could go into. Like the sound was all wrong and I couldn't hear dialogue because like everyone talked at the same time in certain scenes and there was just this gaggle of noise that I couldn't identify who I was supposed to be hearing.
There was also stuff like somehow the environment was really loud. Like, why can't I hear you? You're just in a forest. What's going on?
The only other thing I'd say about the film is it's kind of just the whole kind of modernization the film puts the Western through. It all just feels so outdated and just out of place and just disrupts the whole flow of the film. I didn't like it. I'm sorry for putting it on the list.
No, it's good to try new things. I recommend anyone tries anything new. Doesn't matter if it's heroin or pancakes. If you haven't had it before, it's fine.
That's terrible advice.
Yeah.
Don't listen. What I was going to say was, with the anachronism, that isn't necessarily unique to this film. There's a bunch of period films I've seen from the 90s where they just seem to have no concept of what things used to look like back in the old days.
But it worked in most like cases.
Yeah, but not then here, other though. Times it was like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, which is the kind of thing that this reminded me of.
Yeah. It did have a very TV movie feel to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it just seems to be, in that way, it's of its time, and I think it was a little bit inevitable in that way.
Yeah.
It is very, very 90s.
Yeah. It could have done with being a bit more timeless, but what can you do? All we can do is hope that someone does do what I suggest, take the ideas, make them into a TV show, get HBO to do it, they'll do Deadwood Meets the Wire, and that'll be perfect. And that's the film I wanted to see, or the TV show, I'll still happily watch that, but it just needed to be executed better than this was. Abby, do you have any final thoughts, or does anyone have a cowboy, in fact, that can rate this as?
I have a cowboy.
Oh, go on.
Yeah.
I will give you my final thoughts as well. There's something really frustrating about a film that passes so close to doing things right, but is totally oblivious of them as it goes by. Mm. There were moments of this where it's like, oh, you're going to do this bit totally wrong, like you did the rest.
Oh, it could have been so good.
Why can't you just take the left fork instead of the right? Just one.
Yeah.
So that's just my overall feeling of it. Apart from Billy Zane in a few moments, they just kept making the wrong choice.
Mm.
And my cowboy is a little bit complicated.
Go on.
There's a film called City Slickers, which has an animation of a cowboy as part of its titles.
Yeah.
And this little cowboy is... it's a parody of cowboys, and it exaggerates everything about cowboys. And that's what makes it ridiculous and kind of naff. And that's what this film is to me. It's taken all the things about cowboys that they like and just done them a little bit cartoonish and wrong and just made it just laughable, but not in the way that they actually wanted.
Fair enough. Does anyone else have a cowboy to rate this film as?
Yeah, I got one. This is... okay, do you remember in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure when they go back to the West?
Yeah.
And they try and, like, blend in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's two clueless 90s teenagers trying to recreate what they remember of the West from spaghetti westerns, not from anything to do with history. And they're so 90s, well, 80s in Bill and Ted's case, I guess. But
yeah,
it's so of their era and clueless and like barely even trying, and oh god, that's it. Their cluelessness is what captures this film completely.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
That's good. That's well. Again, you seem to nail these better, like really well. I like them both. Anthony, have you got one, or are we gonna just finish?
Sort of. I have a kind of similar one to Abby's. Did anyone when they were kids ever watch Pee Wee's Playhouse?
I
know of it.
No, I grew up in the UK. I don't know how you would have even watched it.
I've seen Pee Wee.
I think it was on British TV.
Was it?
Yeah, just anyway, rubbish channels.
Okay.
Like, now and again, like a character would pop up, and he was a black cowboy played by Lawrence Fishburne, and he would just be wearing like horrible, colourful rhinestone kind of thing, and just didn't kind of fit anywhere. So it was kind of similar reasons like that Abby gave.
I have a question.
Go on.
Lawrence Fishburne is a black cowboy.
Yeah, I know this, even though I've never actually seen Pee Wee's Playhouse properly. I knew that because I remember having your reaction when I found out.
That's good. If I was to struggle to find one, I think at first I was thinking like the Milky Bar Kid, but that's too white. I mean, white chocolate, white little boy, not apt enough. But I had a few Lego characters, and one of them was a Western guy, and I lost his hat, and I had to replace it with another one, and it was a bit more the new hat I gave him was more modern, and it never felt right. He always looked wrong. All the other cowboys were fine, but this dude, he used to look good. His hat changed. He looked a bit more, I guess, 90s. And it didn't sit right. It didn't work anymore. And that's kind of how this movie is. It's just not right. It's a shame, because it could have been a very cool thing. And that was my Lego guy. Yes, I'm still sad, actually. That's made me very, very teary-eyed. Where is that Lego hat?
This film nearly made me cry anyway, so.
So with that, guys, we'll fire our gold bullets in the air and we'll walk off into the poorly filmed sunset and bid you howdy, or whatever they say in cowboy movies. Goodbye.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thud. That was my punch noise.
Better than that.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. Okay, good.